Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing Squish Lamps and Performax Drill Bit Sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
It's been called a freaking masterpiece. It is filled with passion, sex, and the power of music. Season of the Witch is a superbly absorbing social history of the music context and lasting legacy of goth. From 1979 through to, say, to the present day, Kathy Unsworth has brought up an utterly compelling social history, as I said before, that emerged, a great tribe that emerged from Thatcher's Dark Ages. Described as the first lady of noir, I'm delighted to welcome back on the show, Kathy Unsworth. Kathy, how are you? Welcome back.
I'm very good and very glad to be here. Thank you.
Indeed, goth. I mean, it has been there or thereabouts. Exactly, it's been there or thereabouts. It's a look. It's a lifestyle. It's a tribe. It doesn't scream for attention. It's got great people in, and it was formed, if you like, out of, what can we say, a reaction to the post-punk. It was actually people who could sort of play, as opposed to, you know, the crash and burner of the rockers, the punk rockers.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point you just made, because when I started off the book, sort of in the immediate aftermath, well, I started off the book with Margaret Thatcher getting elected, and he were the bands there. Well, Joy Division was one, and Ian Curtis was one of the few people in my book, I think, who actually voted for Margaret Thatcher. But there you go. He and I've got Susie and the Banshees and Magazine and The Cure, who I think I see them as the foundations, but they all came out of punk. And obviously Susie was part of the Sex Pistols following, and Howard DeVoto from Magazine was earlier in the Buzzcocks, and he'd brought the Sex Pistols up to Manchester, and that show at the Leicester Free Trade Hall where Joy Division saw them, and that was sort of how the virus spread around. And I thought it was quite interesting. I found an early review describing Joy Division by Mary Harron of Melody Maker, comparing them to the 19th century romantics and saying, whereas they were talking about reacting to the Industrial Revolution, Joy Division very much using the atmosphere of this sort of still very heavily bomb-damaged and desolate Manchester that they grew up in, where the post-war town planners had smashed the place up quite a bit, as much as the Luftwaffe, really. And Barney Sumner did talk about how that had affected and given their music its sort of desolate feel. So I kind of feel like my goths are sort of carrying on a tradition that had been, you know, as reacting to the fracturing of our national psyche by tremendous events. Three fantastic artwork, if that doesn't sound too pretentious.
Not at all. But the thing is, because people think, you know, young people who weren't there think of the 80s yeah. as all sort of red braces and every jiggling around to Madonna and huge shoulder pads. And maybe it was in certain parts of that there, London. But for the majority of teenage kids, it was places like Manchester, Birmingham, Liverpool, Sheffield, Leeds. I mean, they were depressing because there was that whole, if you like, come down from the Industrial Revolution, the come down from the 60s and the 70s, they've been quite hard. They didn't want the violence of the punk movement. That didn't appeal to them. But the romantic, and I use that sort of Byronesque allusion to having been here before, and if you like, creating a look and an attitude that was sort of melancholic but had grounded itself in history, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, totally. And also it's really interesting because I'd like the to put the psycho into psychogeography, as you know. And I like to look at, and the north is the real cauldron of the goth movement, and, you know, Leeds and Bradford probably being the major centres. And they are the major centres, you know, they have been in history, always against each other, actually, from the time of William the Conqueror to the Wars of the Roses to the Civil War. And then what unites them in the 80s is Thatcher's Civil War on the miners, because these are all in the middle of massive pit areas, these two cities. And the music that comes out of that is, you know, epic, isn't it? The Sisters of Mercy, that song Heartland they did, which to me sees the what's coming in its crystal ball. And the fact they had that on the Temple of Love EP with their cover of Gimme Shelter by the Stones, War Children, It's Just a Kiss Away. And then, you know, Bradford has New Model Army. He probably did the two great, to me, the two greatest State of the Nation albums of the 80s, In Vengeance, the one that came out in 84 and had the Falklands on it, had the sort of, the Christian Militia song, which is just as relevant today about the lunatic right in America and how they've, you know, and obviously Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan were just like that at the time, but that song could so easily apply to Trump now. It's, you know, and then after a few years after the miners' strike and the country's been laid to waste, really, they do Thunder and Consolation, which I think is their other, you know, This Is the Damage Done album. So, yeah. The heartland of goth probably is what I call goth's own county in Yorkshire.
And the other thing is the fact that you point out that, you know, these are huge albums. They may not make the album charts, which is all poppy and frothy, but they do. What they do, we just said, you know, they go back to Rolling Stones tracks. You know, Susie goes back to, obviously, Dear Prudence. I mean, there is that going back to... They don't do what the punks do and go, all other music is rubbish and we are ground zero. They recognise that it's got... But also, I mean, it's the way it evolves, because... You know, goth evolves from, say, Hong Kong Garden and Joy Division, and that very sort of insular. I mean, Joy Division, not exactly a show band. And then by the 80s, the end of the 80s, it maybe gets a little bit sort of Lost Boys and a bit Californian, but it's still, you know, the music evolves, and you have these anthems, but with a social conscience.
Yeah. No. Exactly. And I think goth is almost often accused of not being political, but I actually have charted a political course through this book with goth. And one of the other people who I've mentioned, New Model Army, D. Amanda Galas, and her one-woman war on the ignorance surrounding AIDS and all the work that she did to bring that into the public arena. She's, you know, highly commendable. Lydia Lunch, everything she's ever done has been to try and enlighten and inform people, and, you know, through spoken word as well as music. But also they've all been at work on a sort of incredible body of music that reaches back into the past. And Diamanda and Lydia are both taking inspiration from the far past as well. And that's why I put into the book sections on what I call goth fathers and goth mothers, so you can learn more about these people like Edgar Allan Poe, like the Shelleys, like the Brontes, and like kind of obscure musicians you might not have heard of, like Lee Hazelwood and like Karen Dalton, as well as people you might have heard like Billie Holiday and Maria Callas, who also I just think, and I haven't got them actually as goth fathers, but I think Beatles and Elvis both are kind of like the gods, beyond the goth fathers. There's so much of what they did, and because I guess they did it the first and in many ways the best, so they're sort of omnipresent too, whereas punk, as you say, destroy all hippies, destroy the past. Mm. These people are slightly more intelligent. approach to, you know, time is a continuum, and these people have been here before and seen these things, then we can take hope and courage from that.
And also the role of women, even from the early days in the goth movement. Yeah. And it wasn't rap, it wasn't put people down, it wasn't punk where women were, to a lot of extent, punk was kind of here and gone, but it wasn't exactly welcoming to most women. But goth, Absolutely. Yeah. You've got Susie. We've got Cocteau Twins. We've got sisters. There were just so many women getting involved with goth because they got it, and it was an art form.
Yeah, I felt lucky I had goddesses as my role models. So, yeah, Susie, Lydia, Jules as well, the flame-haired poetess who I used to see with New Model Army and who had the power to make rooms full of drunken punk rockers shut up and listen to what she had to say, which was incredibly inspiring to me. And without those women, I probably never would have had the courage to think I had anything worth saying. So I do feel that I was really lucky to have such strong female role models when I was growing up. And I really would like to pass them on via this book to anyone who hasn't had the delight of meeting these brilliant women before to find out more about them.
The other thing it was, I mean, people might think that everybody just stood around on street corners or wandered through graveyards, you know, feeling miserable. But they're, you know, they're live performances. I mean, Killing Joke. I mean, they're goth. I mean, my parents wouldn't let me go and see them because I was too young. But I mean,
did they think you would sell your soul to the devil if you went to see Killing Joke?
I think it was the audience who were going to be there because they were, you know, Killing Joke were quite extreme.
They were
and
heavy,
Jazz,
weren't they?
Jazz was on fire at that point and lovely. The Tube was...
Almost quite literally, didn't he? Because he had Dave the Wizard, the fire breather, on stage with him. So, yeah. And it's hilarious to think they just played the Albert Hall a month ago as well.
Yeah, because...
Two months ago.
Because, again, and I always say this mainly about rock fans, but goths as well, they stick with because, there are no goth boy bands. They've never tried to have, I mean, Strawberry Switchblade, maybe, but apart from that, nobody's ever tried to make sort of goth. Well, they kind of try to do it with the whole vampire shtick, but the goths are a bit more sort of, we're a bit more sensible than getting carried away with that. And it was always a bit more rocky, for example, with Lost Boys. It was more rock and roll and Guns N' Roses rather than sort of darkness.
Yeah, I know. I think that basically it's like most of these bands are all still going. And I actually had no idea Susie would make her comeback when we chose that cover image, but it had to be the Queen on the cover anyway. And I'm so glad she is remaking her comeback. But these bands like New Model Army, again, Dementia and Killing Joke, very much, very politically motivated from the beginning and very much a sort of alternative to offer people an alternative way of life that they don't actually have to. This is why I think I see goths as being like the Addams Family. Like, yeah, they know that there is this world of straight, normal people out there, but actually they're much happier in their world. And there's more love for each other and support, and they take care of each other, like the fans of all these bands have done through down the decades now, than there is in the normal straight world. So, you know, why should we want to come out of our crypt and go down the disco?
The other thing is, I mean, if you remember the 80s, again, people seem to think it was all people being happy and shiny and Live Aid. But, you know, the CND, miners' strike, mutually assured destruction, AIDS. I mean, these were proper issues. So to be leaping around saying if we all took a holiday, it would be okay, and Howard Jones. Obviously, if you're sitting in Rochdale, you're going to have an awful lot more in common with listening to, and I'm not saying it's bedsit music, but listening to Joy Division or listening to early Cure. Than you
and
are with.
Yeah, and Soft Cell even, he were on Top of the Pops. And I think one of my gateways into goth, seeing Mark Ullman singing Tainted Love, that was amazing. And when you live in a little place, and like I grew up in a seaside town, loads of my friends were gay, but at the time they could not come out. They were too scared. And Mark Ullman was like having an older brother, I think, sending signals out, it's okay, you're not on your own. There's people like me. And I think that's really important because I think people maybe don't even realize how homophobic it was to grow up in those days, how frightening it could be. And I'm really glad we've come a long way from there. But it was shocking going back and thinking how long it took between Terence Higgins dying and that public information film. I think it was 7 years before the Don't Die of Ignorance campaign. Mm. And that was largely because Terence Higgins Fund had been set up to raise the money for awareness and research and not anything the government had done. So that's another shocking, shocking part of the 80s to look back on, really.
Should we mention Bauhaus and Bela Lugosi? Because that dragged out, whenever you say goth, that is perhaps the go-to, isn't it? 6 minutes, lots of screeching, a man with basically no moles at the back of his... I mean, that was an urban myth when I was a kid. He'd had his teeth taken out to make his cheekbones look more vampiric.
Yeah, well, I think he was just naturally more grave than the others, wasn't he? Pete Murphy. No, what a brilliant song, though, and how good does it still sound? You know, it's the first foundation single of goth, I think, and it's a magnificent beast. And it's gone on to inspire people, you know, down, I think Portishead said they were in massive attack, and those people were really... That, and Hit Them and Killing Joke have got that dub sound to them, which is really interesting as well, that sort of... crossover to another sort of outsider youth culture. Killing Joke with Dan, the blues clubs of Ladbroke Grove, listening to this hardcore reggae and really getting into that dub beat, and Bauhaus marry that so beautifully in with the creaking insect noises and the pay end to the fallen count and all that. It's a marvellous, that sums up the atmosphere of the early 80s, does it not? Well, 1979, we came out about the early 80s. Bela Lugosi said that's what it felt like the whole time.
Yeah, and then it was used in The Hunger with Bowie, and we all went, oh, because obviously Bowie is, I mean, do you bring, you know, the Thin White One into the book? Because obviously...
He's in there loads, yeah. He's uber Nosferatu. Like Elvis and the Beatles, he's kind of one of the huge gods of the scene, without whom, etc.
And what's it like going back and talking to people and about it? Because, I mean, it didn't fade away. We don't get have fake goths, you know, walking up and down Carnaby Street like the punks taking pictures of each other. So it's a living, breathing thing, because we grow into goth, because, you know, our heroes in goth are, you know, thousands of years old, basically.
Exactly, yeah. You can't kill what doesn't live.
So when you go back to the, you know, 79 and the way that it developed and keeps developing, and it, obviously there was a little bit of mainstream, but obviously in the 80s, and we had the Cult perhaps going, the Cure perhaps going a little bit more mainstream, but they then went out and branched out and did fabulous albums, as did Susie, as did the rest of them.
Exactly. Or it was a craft that they were committed to, I think, their music. It wasn't, you know, there's people who, you know, obviously want to avoid work and want to make, you know, make have a life that is less, you know, that is more interesting and fulfilled. But some people go after the fame, and that's the fame and the money and the glory, and that's what they want. And other people, like the Cramps, who I love so much, and they just said, this music seized us, it possessed us, it took control of our lives, and we had to go with it.
Now, the Cramps, okay? Because here we are now, 2023, 2022, Tim Burton brings out, and you know, Tim obviously, and American, oh my God, gothic, gosh, incredible. But Tim has been, obviously, it's a very English thing, and you think of all Sweeney Todd and all that sort of stuff. And then he brings out Wednesday, okay, the Netflix, which is massive. And for dark little souls like myself, I'm like, that's a great starting point for those who haven't done the Addams Family and some of the influences. And then they bring out the Cramps for that dance scene, and the whole place just went absolutely wild. Isn't it brilliant to see that one back, and people who weren't around going, what is this? You know, who is this? And going back and watching Beetlejuice, etc.
No, fantastic. And one of the things that heartens me, because I am so sad that Lux is not here with us anymore, and that him and Ivy have been temporarily split up in this plane. But one of the quotes I found of him saying from the very beginning was, all I want to do is be in rock and roll band, and then I'll be doing it till after I die. Well, there you go. Lux's prophecy just came true. Even though they did speed that track up and cleaned it up a little bit, it's not quite as menacing as the original. But Lux is still rocking from the other side of the tomb, so.
And it's a good gateway to those who don't know anything about goth, you know.
It's a fantastic, I'm really pleased that my 14-year-old nieces now, her favourite songs are that and Release the Bats by the Birthday Party.
Ah, the Birthday Party. I mean, but if you look at what we're into, you know, spirituality, you know, the occult, I mean, not in a bad way, but these are suddenly the buzzwords, aren't they, of this new generation. Everybody wants to be a witch, a white witch. Everybody wants to be more in contact with nature. Everybody wants to read the books about the other side. And that's what kind of goths have been doing for centuries, but in this incarnation for the past 40 years.
Well, yes, that is what links it back to the Romantics and back to the time of, you know, the Brontes seeing the mills coming into Yorkshire. And that was another thing that shocked me. When I looked back into that, a mill girl's life expectancy was 24 years. And that, you know, that the displacement of them being able to work from home as cottage industries and being shoved into these factories and, you know, Blake writing about the dark satanic mills. It's all like a massive national trauma that we're still, and say that that's why it comes in circles, and this book moves in circles, I think, through time.
And what's it been like getting the reaction from those who were there, those who are discovering? I mean, it's been absolutely, you know, a magnificent wild dissection of music, the madness and the social dysfunction. Hail Unsworth, quote unquote. I mean, that's going to make you...
That was a particularly fond one of mine because that came from Billy Chainsaw. He was the PA of Susie and the Banshees. They changed his life when he was 17. I think he managed to leave Birmingham and go and work for them rather than work in the factory where he was going to be a pipe fitter welder. And instead, he travelled the world with the Banshees, and now he's a really respected and successful artist. And yeah, so that was the other thing. These people helped people through the window into a better world beyond.
Indeed, and they're still, I mean, as I said, still with us, and still you can see the Gothic influences in lots of people and lots of films. We went through the whole Twilight thing and went, oh, okay, fair enough. And now we've got the whole Wednesday thing. Again, it just shows how far Tim Burton, not Smith Stanley, but you've got, you know, the Batman movies with Nolan. We've had all that sort of stuff as well. And I mean, obviously based in Spain, being a goth was somewhat hard with the heat.
Yes,
wearing a diamante brooch, et cetera, was a bit, you know, and a velvet waistcoat was obviously going to be a problem.
But you must have suffered. That's terrible.
The hair was the problem. What do you hope that people will take from this brilliant tome?
Oh, well, I think of this as my grimoire, right? Everything. So it chronicles the dark years of my youth, but it also contains everything good I've ever learned through living through those years and subsequently from that I was taught by these musicians, by John Peel playing their stuff on the radio. But, you know, that so important unseen network of Peel Towers that he reached all us lonely little kids who thought we were weird and gave us that really brilliant music that was more frightening and more brilliant than and got us through the playground and into adulthood, basically. So I hope that they'll just find a wealth of good things, nothing but the good things, as Andrew Eldritch once said in this book.
The book is called Season of the Witch. It is by Cathy Unsworth, who's been speaking to you today. Cathy, if people want to find you online, where can they, in the nicest possible way, track you down?
Well, I've got a website at cathyunsworth.co.uk, and I'm also on Facebook at Cathy Unsworth. I'm not on Twitter, but my publishers 98 are on Twitter and Instagram. So if you look for 98 or at Pete Selby, you can find, if you prefer to do things through that medium, you can find them all there.
And there's enough Gothic stuff out there, trust me, to keep you satisfied on Instagram anyway. The book is called Season of the Witch. It's by Cathy Unsworth. Cathy, once again, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you today.
Always a pleasure. Thank you for asking me to come back and speak to you again.